Next week, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in Brnovich v. the Democratic National Committee. The Arizona case is challenging two of Arizona's election laws. One of those bans dropping off an early ballot for someone outside your immediate family, and the other requires ballots to be discarded if the person votes from the wrong precinct. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals found that both policies were discriminatory toward Native American, Latino, and Black voters. But the case has broader implications than the two laws in question.
Voting rights activists are worried that the more conservative Supreme Court could use the cases to strike down or nullify an important part of the U.S. Voting Rights Act, a seminal civil rights era law. At a recent press conference, Jacqueline De Leon, staff attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, argued if the court strikes down Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it could open the floodgates for state lawmakers to pass more discriminatory election laws.
Section 2 remains a critical tool in fighting voter suppression in Indian country, and we believe that the Supreme Court should affirm there's no place for racism in our elections in 2021.
De Leon says the so-called ballot harvest ban hits Native American voters especially hard, as tribal members often have to travel up to 50 miles one way to access a post office or visit their local polling places, and frequently pool resources to get to pick up mail, including mail-in ballots.
Increasingly, we're seeing laws that capitalize on these vulnerabilities. They can seem neutral, like requiring an ID or banning ballot collection, but they shut out natives from voting when the nearest DMV or post office is 50 miles away.
With us to talk about the issues is Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich, who will defend the laws before the Supreme Court next Tuesday. He also announced a nearly $25 million settlement with APS, the state's largest utility, which we will also get to. But first, Mark, opponents of the two aforementioned Arizona laws say they encourage discrimination and disproportionately affect minority groups and people of color. What's your argument in response?
Every public servant has a sacred duty in protecting the people's rights to vote. And at the same time, we saw this in the last election cycle. We want to make sure that the public has confidence in the integrity of the results. So Arizona, like a lot of other states, has common sense election integrity measures. And in fact, one of the laws that we're defending, the out-of-precinct voting requirements or restrictions, that's something a majority of the states in this country have. So we're not some sort of outlier unique in that. The second, the other law involves ballot harvesting and Arizona's restrictions on ballot harvesting. This is something that no less than Jimmy Carter recommended in when he co-authored a report with Secretary of State James Baker advocating for restrictions on ballot harvesting. Arizona's a one of about a dozen states that have these restrictions, and we've basically argued that these measures are designed to protect the integrity of the ballot, not to disenfranchise anyone. And I think the facts and the evidence speak to that. And if you don't believe me or you don't want to take the recommendations of Jimmy Carter, no less than the Biden Justice Department recently filed a letter saying that they believe Arizona's statutes, these two statutes, are consistent with the Voter Rights Acts and the Constitution.
One of the things, though, that opponents of the ban on ballot harvesting, let's talk about that one, have said is that there's not a ton of evidence that there have been problems with this, that, you know, groups that civic groups that or advocacy groups that collect these ballots are not turning them in or destroying them or any of the things that supporters of the law say could happen. Is it right, do you think, to prospectively try to ban something when there hasn't been a ton of evidence that there's been a problem with this practice before?
From a legal perspective, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized in the Crawford case, which dealt with ID laws, actually, but they recognized in that state that states can adopt and enact prophylactic measures. We do know that in 2018, there was a congressional election in North Carolina that literally was overturned because of an abuse of ballot harvesting. So you had a congressional district, a federal congressional district, that was without representation for nearly a year because of ballot harvesting.
Let me ask you one question on the out-of-precinct law. Is that less of an issue now that Maricopa County and others use vote centers as opposed to precinct voting?
Yes, Mark, it is. And I would actually, we have argued and we've urged the court, the U.S. Supreme Court, to look at our voting laws in the totality. And the reason why we do that is because out-of-precinct votings, once again, if you look at what the Ninth Circuit did in Bonk, they kind of cherry-picked and manipulated the data. But the reason is we have multiple ways to vote here in Arizona, as you know. We allow no excuse absentee balloting. We have voting centers, even though we don't have them in all the counties. People can drop off their ballots the day of. So there are numerous ways that people can exercise the franchise, they can vote. And When it came to people voting in the wrong precinct, it ended up being about 4,000 ballots of the more than 2 million that were cast. So really, this is a very, very small number. And we do believe the state has interest in encouraging people to vote in the right precinct. In that way, that affects election officials so they can prepare adequately as far as personnel, number of ballots, et cetera.
We are in a situation now, and Arizona has become the poster child in a lot of ways for this in terms of a lack of trust with how the voting process went. Earlier this week, we spoke with Maricopa County Supervisor Jack Sellers about the audits that came back clean in terms of voting equipment and software, et cetera. And yet there's a certain percentage of people, and higher than people would like to see, who just don't trust this process. How do you quell that?
I think you address that by making sure that you have laws and statutes in place that ensure public's confidence in the voting system. And that's why when you see these challenges from partisan groups like the Democratic National Committee to out-of-precinct voting or even restrictions on ballot harvesting, I think that undermines another party's confidence in what their motives are. And it makes it look like everything they're doing is political. And so I think you have to have common sense election integrity measures in place that give people confidence in the results. Second thing, and I think that as public officials, the way we talk about issues matters. Both sides were sometimes guilty of this where, you know, on the one hand, there were some people that were extremely dismissive of people's concerns, and there was other people that really exaggerated some of these concerns or these anomalies that happened. When I announced that we were going to look into Sharpies and whether that was a problem or not, I got blasted by a lot of people on the left and saying, oh my gosh, you're furthering conspiracies, you shouldn't do that. And I would ask you, isn't it better to look into these things and say, hey, we looked into, investigate them, there's nothing to see here, than let them fester and stew out there?
No question. You got criticized for following up on Sharpiegate. But when you say that it may have calmed the waters, but it really didn't, because you're going to have a certain percentage of people who are just not going to believe anything. What do we do with folks like that? That's a pretty high percentage and growing, regardless of the work you've done or Secretary of State's office or the supervisors. There's still that percentage of people thinking someone, and some of these are in the state Senate.
What I learned, or what we've talked about even here, is that back in, you know, 2004, you had a lot of people on the left and Democrats, some of them even contested election, that said that, you know, they were critical of the voting machines and devices. And so, you know, there's folks on both the left and right. This isn't, you know, something that's confined to one side. But I think that's why anything we can do as public officials to try to remain calm and let people know that, look, these issues are taken seriously, that we all have an interest in making sure that elections are fair and secure. We want people to have confidence in results. I think it's important for us to keep talking about that.
So, Mark, let me ask you about that APS settlement. This was obviously an issue with the rate tool where folks were not on the most cost-effective plan for them. Was this intended to make all customers whole, like in terms of like if they spent more than they should they be getting all back that they spent that they shouldn't have?
When we originally started looking into this, there was an issue regarding the online rate calculator, and APS ultimately gave refunds to all of those individuals and then apparently gave them some sort of other restitution on top of that. But during the course of that, we started looking into it, and we realized that, or we felt that there were still certain numbers of people that were on plans that were not the most cost effective. And so even though APS has more than a million customers here in Arizona, we believe there was about 220,000 people in Arizona that may have not been on the most optimal plan. Now, there could be various reasons for that. We believe that that might have been because there was a lack of information provided by APS. So normally, as you guys know, it's up to the Corporation Commission to regulate utilities and, you know, go through the process of rates and what they're charging, what they're not charging. But our folks here, we came up with a novel theory. And that basically is that lack of information or that inadequate information may have resulted in some people paying more than they should have. So we got that class of individuals. We wanted to make sure that there was as much money as quickly as possible going to people that may have been affected in that class. And then that's why we came up with this settlement with APS. And so we did what we thought was right, and we thought would help the most consumers as quickly as possible, especially as everyone struggles with COVID.
Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Mark, thanks as always for the time.
Thanks, guys.